am Beru, and this is Modern Immigrant. Welcome, everybody, to a new episode of Modern Immigrant. Yay! So excited that you're here. Happy Wednesday, or happy any day that you're listening to this story. Remember to subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube or in any of the platforms that you may be listening to this episode. Subscribing really helps this podcast and these stories to be found and heard everywhere in the world. You can also follow us on Instagram at Modern Immigrant and our website, modernimmigrant.net, if you want to learn a bit more about what we're doing here in Modern Immigrant. I had the amazing opportunity to talk to Oscar about his immigration journey from Mexico. Oscar had a very difficult experience of being separated from his mom when they were crossing the border to the USA. In this interview, we talk about the impact that some of our immigration experiences can have on our mental health. We also talk about the healing process that comes with immigration and also the importance of building community. In this interview, Oscar also talked about the experience of being a DACA recipient in the USA, what that means for him. And we also discuss some of the misconceptions that people have around being a DACA recipient or around being undocumented in the USA. I'm really grateful that Oscar was able to be here sharing his story, opening his heart about his immigration journey, and also teaching us so much about immigration and what can we do to better support our community of immigrants. You need to definitely go ahead and check out the links that I'm leaving you down below and links that Oscar is going to share along the interview, because he has an amazing website, he has an amazing blog, he talks about his experiences, and he also shares wonderful resources in the area where he lives in North Carolina for immigrants' mental health support and other important information. So thank you so much for being here. Enjoy this interview. And don't forget to share it with someone else if you found this interview helpful. So thank you for being here. So, Oscar, welcome to Modern Immigrant, and welcome everybody that's watching or listening to another episode. I'm really happy that we were able to make this connection and this episode happen. So, Oscar, again, bienvenido.
Muchas gracias. Super excited to be here. I love what you're doing and hearing about this podcast. I'm super excited to get to connected with the community.
I was super excited to hear that you have been at other podcasts as well, because that's not very common when I have guests in the podcast. And tell us a little bit about yourself first, like what do you do for work? And then we can start asking more questions about your immigration journey.
Yeah, I've loved doing all the other podcasts. It's honestly been a humbling honor to be able to help spread awareness and different kind of projects and pieces of information that I've come across. And, you know, my time in North Carolina throughout the state, it's just learning different pieces that are involved with the immigrant narrative that is very complex. You know, it's not a monolithic experience. It's very can be similar to different stories, but each story is very unique. And so a little bit about myself. I work as a senior software engineer at what's called the Empower Project. We are a nonprofit that helps grassroots organizations, labor unions, and campaigns engage with their local communities via relational organizing. So specifically targeted at friends and family over a targeted list of, you know, a large list of people that they're trying to engage with, but we're keeping it at the grassroots movements to move their missions forward. And we provide a free app that's provided to 501c3s. And then we work with campaigns to kind of figure out what that looks like for them as well.
That's so awesome. And that's amazing that you're sharing that, because I was going to ask you like towards the end of the interview for like any places, resources that you wanted to share. So I'm so excited to hear that you're involved in that organization. And are you based somewhere specifically, or you serve communities in other areas?
Yeah, so the organization is headquartered out of Madison, Wisconsin, but we work as a national organization where we've engaged with organizations throughout the nation, North Carolina, New York, Illinois, Texas, California, you know, and we have staff all over the place as well, Washington State. We are all over and happy to connect with anyone that might have need for this application.
That is so awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. And would it be okay if I add that as a link into the episode description? Nice. Tell us what's your immigration? Because I always love to start the interview by asking my guests what that immigration journey or story that they have. And it's honestly really beautiful when we are almost in every interview is exactly what you're saying. Like, every story is so different, even under similar circumstances. But then it's really beautiful to see how the immigrants have created their own careers, profession, and path influenced by their immigration journey in a very, you know, significant way. So I can see a little like of that connection with yours before even knowing your journey. So tell us, from where to where did you kind of immigrated from?
Yeah. And to Thailand, I think I had a friend of mine mention it one way where he was super excited to connect, especially as I think both once you connect with someone that you realize it's not just me in the situation, it's like a beautiful moment realization of like, I'm not alone. And then two, he was saying that it's very fascinating to hear like what brought you to a certain area and what kept you all there, right? Because it's very unique circumstances where I think, you know, the idea of immigrant cities are like the big ones that we hear about, like New York City, California, you know, like it's just interesting when you also hear like, yo, where other places too? And, you know, there's a community that's thriving and blossoming and growing. So sure. It's very beautiful to hear that. So I'm glad you've encountered that. And I appreciate that you ask. My story begins in Mexico. I was born in the state of Mexico, right outside Mexico City. I like to make a funny joke that I'm triple Mexican because Mexico City, Mexico State, in a Mexican country. So definitely can't get away from being Mexican.
And exactly. I love it.
Thank you. And I grew up in North Carolina after we immigrated in 99. We started our journey through the Mexican-U.S. border. I was separated from my mother at the time when we were crossing. So I was 3-4 years old at the time. And it was definitely, I'm sure, as a toddler, I don't remember much vividly, but I hear her narrative and her story. And I can't imagine being a toddler at the time, the trauma that potentially impacted both, you know, the mother and myself as, you know, going through that. You know, you've been attached to this young child for, you know, many years of their life now at this point. And it's just hard to realize that you're gone from them. And I actually hadn't talked to my mom much about what she had felt at the time. But recently we had the opportunity to go through a documentary film experience where we were interviewed. And my mom shared, and she was just like, I don't know, she her emotion, her sentiment, it was like her being able to get a weight off her shoulders in some way just to talk it out loud because she hadn't been given that opportunity. So I think I'd encourage anyone that has, you know, parents that have stories like that to talk to them, to hear that narrative, because it's such a crucial piece of our heritage, of our roots.
I can't even imagine. And the healing that occurs, right, when you're able to open up, when you're able to look back at that moment, and now you're in a more, you know, stable position. Now you're safe. Now you have reached a point in your life, because I can imagine that after going through that for your mom and for yourself, there was so much that you had to do in survival mode, right? There was no time for processing what we just did, which is crossing a border. And so you said that you were separated from your mom, or she, yeah.
Yeah. So at the time we were crossing, we were separated. Thankfully, we managed to come together after about a month's time, which I can't even imagine what that looks like. But even then, you know, I definitely take into consideration some privilege amongst other families that we've seen recently the past several years. And even before then, before the media was covering their stories of how long they've been separated and, you know, the injustice that is happening at the border constantly, even as we speak. And so my heart goes out to them. That I can in some way empathize, but really still not truly understand. It's just really hard. But even then, I think to the healing piece that you just mentioned, even when, you know, you think immigrants are established and the fact that they may have a job here, they may be doing things, but it's still like, you know, that stressor of they're still living day to day. You know, even this concept that I recently managed to talk to some friends and family in Mexico that, you know, they think of, you know, once you go to the north, people are living the life. And it's like, you know, the fact that they're making dollars doesn't really translate to the fact when they're also paying dollars, you know, to transfer the currency to another country might make it seem like it's a lot more, which, you know, is definitely great if people do that. But also just considering the fact that they're still living paycheck to paycheck once they're here, you know, that life doesn't change magically once they come over here. And it's something to just explicitly come to say out loud, because it reminds us of that gratitude that we need to have of the place that we find ourselves today.
I really, really appreciate that you're saying that, because I think that even immigrants and people that are not immigrants as well can have that. And you know what? People that haven't migrated yet might have that thinking. And right. I'm sure I did too. Like, okay, I'm going to arrive to the US no matter how, no matter in what conditions, and then everything's going to get better. And it's, you know, it's just put kind of like our feet on the ground and be like, it's not exactly like that. Some things are going to get better. Some things are going to be different, I would say. Mm-hmm. But definitely thank you for, you know, showing that to the listeners, because I think that's something that we don't always grasp.
Of course, yeah.
How has it been for you? And you're already sharing a little bit of like growing up, but I want to hear more about how has it been for you growing up as an immigrant and as an undocumented immigrant, because we're also going to touch on that.
Yeah, of course. So I think one of the things that rooted us specifically to North Carolina was that my dad had come over as a farm worker under a contract for 3 years prior to our journey of immigration here. And so growing up, you know, I think the experiences changed from city to city or from town to town, even from neighborhood to neighborhood of how you grew up. And I think back a lot recently, as I've been very privileged to be asked this question and to think through it a lot of, you know, my experience was in a very rural community in one of the largest counties in North Carolina. But even then, it's mostly agriculture. So it's just very hard to, like, you know, you still don't really see friends. You're still kind of within your own pocket of community. And that's great. But it's definitely a culture shock almost every day that you're growing up, going to school where it's predominantly white, you know, majority. And you're having here to be on a platform where you have to explain yourself, your culture. You have to almost, you know, you grow with this shame of, I vividly just attended a conference through Latinx Ed, which is a nonprofit here in North Carolina that's pushing for education equity for all students in the state. But one of the things that came up was I remember vividly going to school and I didn't have a lunchbox. I had a little bag, you know, a grocery shopping bag with a styrofoam plate and some aluminum foil over it. And there were huevos a la mexicana and it was delicious. But I am so sad that, you know, at the time I didn't know how to recognize that pride of having, you know, such a delicious meal that was made but with love for my mother. And, you know, I would look over and I would kind of shy away because mm-hmm. all these other students had, you know, a nice looking lunchbox, a nice looking like prepared meal or Lunchables. And to this day, I'm like, Lunchables are not that great.
Oh my God, they're not.
But like not recognizing how to express that in such a rural community in such a space where I didn't have the representation, and my teachers and my student body was sort of made up roughly about a third Latino, because it was a very agricultural farm worker, migrant worker community. But even then, it's just like, you know, we are made to think that, you know, we shouldn't be taking up space. And it's a very sad experience.
So, oh my God, thank you so much for talking about that and for sharing that, because it's a combination of so many things. Like, you were also at an age where, you know, kids want to fit in. And to fit in a place where you don't have representation means blending or looking like the majority, right? I wonder if, like, at any point of your immigration, you found yourself feeling more like that you belong. Like, did you find that community within that place, or were you able to kind of find your own spaces? How was that? Because I feel like as immigrants, we're always like on that search, right? Like the places where we belong. How does that look like? It's complicated.
I have so many like little snippets of memories that I've found where I was always seeking that community. And I mean, I can't say that I have talked to other people where they haven't had any sort of community. And I was, again, fortunate enough that I had like a third that I could kind of communicate with, but the education system was pushing me away from them, right? As mm-hmm. I personally was striving to do well in class, get good grades. And my parents, you know, iterated on like, or spoke out loud a lot of like, you know, we've come here with this amount of sacrifice and unknowingly putting, you know, this pressure that students have to grow up with that, you know, to me, I'm super grateful that they did express that, because it did push me to challenge myself and to stretch myself. But even then, not being able to acknowledge the stress or like the possible, like, you know, challenges that I was facing myself mentally to you know, meet that standard. But I would want to interact with a lot of students. And after this conference, there was one memory that came up specifically where we were talking about the unwanted burdens that both teachers and students, when they're the only person that either speaks Spanish or can connect with a certain population of students, is put in a position of like, oh, we know this is a part of your job description, or even as a student, like part of your responsibility. Mm-hmm. But here we're going to put you in this room with all these students because we don't want to prioritize budgeting to get either an ESL professor that, or, you know, improving the ratio of student to teacher ratio there. And I remember in seventh grade, all these students were coming at this teenage level without knowing any English whatsoever. And the teacher would put me like with them to translate, to tell them, you know, what we needed to do. And I was like, I didn't know any better and I would do it. But even then, as I was, you know, having fun with them in Spanish, because I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I get to speak Spanish to them in school. Then I was getting in trouble because he was like, oh, now you're just spending too much time playing. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like, tell me what you want from me. Like, I'm here trying to fulfill like what you put me into a position of. But at the same time, like, I'm having fun now. And sure, I'm going to let my grades slip because now I'm having fun and I'm prioritizing that because that's the position you're putting me into. But I was getting mixed signals and I was just like, I don't know what you want. And unfortunately, shortly after, as the class education system set it up, you know, I started seeing less and less of them in my classroom because it was like the honors classes, the AP classes. And it's so sad that, you know, you start losing that. And so I don't think I found that community consistently throughout my upbringing outside of like in my parents. I grew up going to quinceañeras, being in dancing, and I found some of it there. But then bringing that back to school was no existence whatsoever. And it was challenging.
It's almost like, yeah, thank you. It's almost like you have to create your own mm-hmm. with this combination of like your Mexican background in the life that now you have in the US, which I think that's the challenge, right? Like this American-Mexican complexity and feeling that you belong within different communities. I think it is very beautiful. And I always think that that's one of the things that I appreciate the most about being an immigrant, but it's also one of the most challenging because I don't know if this ever happened to you, but like not feeling Mexican enough or yeah. American enough. Is that, yeah. Can yeah, you speak a little bit on that?
Yeah. And it's, you know, I'm probably making this rapper, you know, famer, more and more famous as I talk to him. But there's this rapper when I was a teenager called JB. It put out one song, was like, Ni de aquí, ni de allá. And I was like just vibing so hard in my teenage years when I first heard that song. And to this day, I still kind of feel that way. I as you mentioned, I'm undocumented. I have DACA and have had it since 2013. Fortunately, I know it's a very unique case right now for a lot of people that could be benefiting from it. But it's you know, crazy to think 10 years later at the anniversary of DACA, it was just a very poorly placed Band-Aid and has not done anything for us. But the piece that I wanted to chat a little bit further was advanced mm-hmm. parole. I got advanced parole in March. Okay. And I was fortunate enough to go experience my home country, Mexico, with my cousins and like experience it. But being there, I thought so much about that song. I was yes. like, I'm not from here. Like, I wish I could, you know, I could connect with them. And I saw a little bit and they were very welcoming of like understanding. But even my cousin, when I was asking him, we are from Ecatepec, which is one of, unfortunately, one of the largest suburbs of Mexico City that has a lot of poverty, a lot of, you know, higher crime rates because of it. And I was asking him, like, so what do I do to not get, you know, put in a bad position? And he was like, you know, think about it like New York City, you know, similar thing. You don't want to be the tourist taking pictures of the, you know, skyscrapers around you because you stand out like a sore thumb. He was like, just don't do anything like that. But then he was like, although like, just pretend like you know where you're going to, because he was like, I could still tell that you're not from here just from the way you're dressing. And I was like, dang, that's crazy. Like, I look like you, like, you know, you're my cousin. We look like family. But he was like, yeah, it's crazy. But I can tell that you're not from here.
It's like, so subtle, right? Yeah. Even the words that you yeah. might be saying that, you know, were words that you hear your parents say, maybe years have passed and now they use different slang. Yeah. I don't know. It changes very, very fast. Yeah. Now that you're touching on DACA and you're saying that things have been changing with DACA, I guess I have a few questions. First, how was receiving DACA? Like, was that a big, good thing? Because I have been hearing so much about there's also some complaints about DACA and yeah. there's also so much that needs to be improved as a pathway to citizenship, for example. Mm-hmm. But how was for you when you received it? How was your experience? Yeah.
So I was listening to Obama's speech in 2012, the summer that I was transitioning from my junior year in high school to my senior year in high school. The summer before, I had actually attended a program that brought us to a college for 5 weeks to kind of experience a little bit of what college was about. So I was super enthused at that point of like, I want to go to college. This is what I want to do. Knowing the limitations of, you know, North Carolina specifically does not allow undocumented individuals to get in-state tuition. We're also barred a lot from other states that are nearby, like Georgia, that completely prohibit undocumented students from enrolling in any public institution. And so amongst all those limitations, I was just trying to like think of a plan. And whenever the Obama administration announced DACA, I felt like at least a respite of air had been given to my vision, because at this point I talked to my dad of like, what are we doing? And one of the options was like, you know what, you can go to Mexico, study there, and then possibly apply for a student visa and go that route. And I was like, yeah, okay. I was excited for that possibility of like, I'll connect my family. But I was like, that means I'm leaving my parents and my siblings here. And it's like, how can you, you know, ask that of any single person of just like giving up family, especially when like, you know, when we can't find a strong community that's allowed to take up space that will, you know, that feels comfortable taking up that space to simply make those, you know, decisions of being at a fork where it's such a painful decision to make. You know, you want to get ahead, you want all these things, but you have to sacrifice so much.
So unfair. Oh, especially and now that I'm thinking about all the efforts that your parents did to come to the US and that pressure that you were talking about, like, you know, we did all of this for you guys, which is in a positive way, like, right, we want the best for you. And then suddenly you're like, wait, how am I going to go back there? Right? Like, what about the future that we have been working on so hard for?
Yeah. And the courage that they had to make that decision themselves, because they left a lot of family coming here. And I'm just like, this can't be a perpetual cycle where each generation is made to make this decision. It's you know, it's got to stop. And so, yeah, it was definitely a really great moment in my life to have that opportunity to continue moving forward here in the U.S. It's, you know, I have my fair share of complaints as well about how the system has been put in place and how it's, you know, not helping a lot of individuals that could benefit from that. And then on top of that, you know, it's a very, very tiny fraction, you know, of what the population needs to really show that the U.S. has our best interest at heart whenever they talk about us. Right. They definitely like to talk about us and the agenda of how they want us to play into the political greater overview of things. And so it's like, you know, well, you know, put some weight behind that. Put us in the budget. Right. I recently heard if there's no budget allocated for a certain population, that really shows how you truly feel. Right. What do you value? What are your priorities? And so I think, you know, that's one of the biggest challenges. But, you know, the positive and the hope that is crucial to continue having is that it did give me work authorization. It gave me a social to go get a driving license. It gave me that opportunity to no longer think about which back roads do I need to take on the road so that I can avoid the police checkpoints.
Right, right. That peace of mind in a way that you didn't have before. What, I was recently talking to someone about the undocumented experience, and it was another undocumented person, and this person was sharing how people don't understand what being undocumented is. Like, they have like a vision of being undocumented, and I want to ask you what it is for you to be undocumented, because I feel like especially people in the outside of even this conversation, they think, I don't even know what they think about being undocumented. Like, this is a choice. I didn't want to apply for a visa. I could be kicked out of the country anytime. I can't have a job. I can't travel. Like, these are a lot of the stereotypes of what a person might think an undocumented immigrant is or how it's impacted. But how has that been for you? Can you tell us that we don't know what it is?
Yeah, no. And I mean, even including in like the list of resources for us to share later, there's a whole blog post on my UndocuLife that I posted about after getting that question asked, like, well, why don't you just apply for citizenship? And I was like, well, okay, let me take a deep breath. And then I would explain. And I was like, okay, I've explained this at least 10 times. And because I work in technology, I'm accustomed to seeing, you know, the FAQ section. And I was like, okay, I probably should make an FAQ of like, you know, just answering the single question. And so I did. And even then I learned a lot myself of like, you know, people are always like, well, you can go to the military, you can do these, you can do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, yes, but there's limitations on how to achieve that. You need to have some form of status beforehand. You need to, you know, there's so many little boxes in the fine print to pursue what people understand to be very simple and that they take for granted when they haven't had to navigate the immigration system of the United States or any other country for that matter, right? I think it goes to say that, you know, immigration is not just happening in the States and it's not just a problem in the States. There's many other countries that face this. And, you know, I think it's a complex issue that I understand is hard to solve. But we need to start making steps to solve it. We can't just, you know, always kick the can down the road and be like, oh, well, it's hard to solve, so therefore we won't take it.
Yeah, it's either we take that route of like, oh, this is too hard to solve, or then we simplify it, as you're saying, like, oh, just get married or just do this or just do that, which I'm not saying that those things won't, as you were saying, fix it. It's a way, but it's not the only one, right?
To your question of like what it is to be undocumented, to me, it's just, it's hard to put into words because it's a mixture of emotions. It's a mixture of papers that get sent to you that explain, you know, well, you know, we understand that you want to do this, but you can't. You know, the first experience that I had of understanding what it is to be undocumented for me was in North Carolina. People start to apply for a driver's education class at 14 and a half. And so in eighth grade, I was like so excited. I would hear the announcement at the end of the day where it was like, if you're going to driver's ed and you're an eighth grader, you know, go to the door at exit number, whatever. And so people would line up and I was like, okay, I got like one more year to be able to be one of those students. And you know, I was so excited. And then I get to be that age. I have to like make so much coordination with my parents to make sure that they can pick me up after school because they're working, you know, a job that doesn't necessarily let them get out as the time that they choose, or gas money is such a concern. And so I line everything up and I show up excited. They send us home with a form for like our information, name, social security number. And I, you know, I'm just like looking at this and I'm like, I feel like I don't have a social, but I was just at my parents and I asked them, and yeah, sure enough, you know, there's no opportunity to move forward. And so my dad was like, you know, you just can't go. And that to me also was a moment where I realized this issue doesn't just affect my family or myself. There was a friend of mine that was getting a ride because his parents couldn't pick him up either, but he had documentation and he couldn't stay after school now because I couldn't be the ride. And I was just like, dang, you know, it's not just affecting us. It's affecting society from being able to move ahead. And that escalates, you know, the more we're prevented from contributing to the U.S. economy in a way that the U.S. recognizes as, you know, work authorized processes, we're impacting our local economies, we're impacting our state economy. And, you know, that just goes all the way up to the federal level. And it's so detrimental to our society from being able to move forward. And people seem to not understand that. It's just us wanting to have, as I've worked with some HR people, you know, we call it onboarding. We just need an onboarding guide to get into society. That's all we need.
Yeah, a process, a way to do it, like an application, an improved system. How, I don't know if you're familiar, I'm guessing you are for what I saw on your website, but are you familiar with what's currently happening with DACA? Because I have been hearing a lot of news about, you know, we're waiting for an update, we're waiting to hear if new people can apply, we're waiting to see what's going to happen. Is there anything you can share to us about that you know?
Yes. And I don't remember like the specific like wording or whatever, but I think it's in the US Fifth Circuit, that's in Texas, where right now they're trying to figure out the whether or not DACA is constitutional. And I think we've gone through a couple of legal battles prior to this about that same question, or how it was being rescinded by the Trump administration. And, you know, we've landed at a point where Biden administration came into play and reinstituted DACA as it was when it was first, in, you know, Pat, or the executive action was first instated in 2012. And after that, it was again challenged. And so now, what's happening is that we've the legal system has completely barred any new DACA recipients from being able to apply, which is, again, a very small subset at this point, because the biggest stipulation that restricts people is that they should have arrived to the States by, I believe, July 15, 2007. It might be either June or July, I can't remember. Okay. But so that's one of the biggest restrictions of what subset is left to even be eligible for DACA. And then two, what was happening was that for people that were starting to apply, the stipulation there was that you had to be 16 to apply for DACA. And so as people were turning 16, they were sending it in. And so now that barred first-time applicants from being given DACA, it just shut them out. And so renewals, thankfully, are allowed. I've actually just gone through, like, I think my 7th or 8th renewal, which is crazy to think, because, like, you shouldn't be thinking about me having to renew that many times within the span of 10 years, right? But it has been. And on top of that, not even considering the amount of money that has been put into this from applicants, you know, it's a $500 or approximately a $500 fee each time you apply.
To renew it?
To renew. And you have to apply every 2 years, but you have to apply prior to that, because if it expires, you lose your work authorization, you lose, you know, access to all these things. And so they recommend to apply 6 months before. That way they have enough administration time to process it. But even then, some people have gone 8 months, 10 months prior to recently they gave out an online process to submit. And I actually just went through it. It took around 3 to 4 months, which is, you know, great. But then the issue at the tail end of it is that whenever they approve my next renewal, it cuts off what was left of my current, DACA. I had it until December, but now because it was just cut September, now it's going to expire September 2024. And it's like,
instead of December, right? You keep losing like time just because they're making it faster in a way.
Yeah. And so, and it's great to be fast, but it's also like, you know, and if you break it apart in the business terminology, it's like no company would be paying a contract every time for the same amount of money if they knew that the lease was being shortened every time, right? And that's basically what I'm doing. I'm paying the same amount of money for the lease getting shortened every time. And it's like, what is happening?
That makes no sense. Yeah. Is there like a limit on the amount of times you can apply for a renewal?
No, at this time, you know, I don't think they ever thought as far as that. I think the Obama administration was really pushing to put legislation forward where this wouldn't have to be a permanent thing that people had to deal with, right? And so there's no wording in there as of this point on the limitation of renewals.
That's good.
It's definitely just there's no path forward after that. You're just kind of in this limbo state of, you know, there's no way for you to adjust status because a lot of individuals that have DACA never had A status. And then just for context, having A status means you came in with a student visa, H-1B visa, or something of the like. And so that's one of the stipulations of even adjusting to A status.
I see. Yeah. What would you say have been like the biggest challenge or barrier in your immigration journey?
I'd say it's almost even just the mental health aspect where I had to, thankfully my employer at the time when I went through this, offered, life coaching, and I had, a life coach that essentially functioned as kind of, therapy sessions to chat through this kind of mental dilemma that I had put in my head because of DACA of like, I only have 2 years to get things done. And, you know, that created a time ticking sense in the back of my head where I was kind of pressured and rushed all the time, thinking about like, you know, if I don't do this in 2 years and DACA goes away, my work authorization goes away, you know, I have to get X experience. I have to get a raise. I have to get a promotion. I have to, you know, I wanted to buy a house. I realized that, you know, buying a house isn't as simple as just, you know, putting a down payment. You have expenses to either, do you have to fix it? Do you have to fix things that come up, you know? And it's so stressful, along with like navigating all the legalese to renew, to apply, to find resources. You know, there's people at the time whenever the first big number of like the amount of DACA applicants or beneficiaries, we were close to like the 800,000 mark. Now it just dropped to about 636,000. And part of that is because it hasn't been available for people that can afford the renewal fee that often or can afford the legal assistance to go through that process. And it's just so frustrating to go through that. I've been very blessed and gifted to be on the opportunity to continue to have that. But if you let your DACA expire because of for whatever reason, you might not be able to renew it later down the road because you might accrue too much unlawful presence, which means you're in the States after the age of 18 without any sort of protections, either visa or DACA, which provides a protection over that. And at that point, you might not be eligible. And if you need to ever adjust status, if you have to adjust status when you've never had a status and you leave the country, you trigger one of the bans, depending on whether it was half a year that you overstayed without any lawful presence, or a year, then it's a 10-year ban. And it's like, how do they expect us to make a life even after they may have approved us a path to citizenship without getting rid of those bans as well?
Right. And just leaving with that fear. Like, thank you for talking about that. Like the mental health aspect, like it's almost like, okay, I can manage all the paperwork, all the payments, which is a lot of stress. But then on top of that, I have to go to work. I have to pay rent. I have dreams. Like I want to buy a house. It's like, how do you leave your day to day with this pressure, with this fear and unknowing? Because you might have the money, you might have the means to apply, but then we don't know what's going to happen, right? Yeah. With the government. So is there anything, I always like to ask for resources that have helped you or that have been, you mentioned the coach, you mentioned therapy, talking to someone. Is there anything else that you feel like have been really helpful to get for you to like navigate all of these processes?
Yeah, extreme shout out. You know, first and foremost, my parents who have always been super encouraging, but just the general support system that I've had from my parents and my siblings has been immensely helpful of realizing that, you know, we don't have to do this alone. And I think as an immigrant, sometimes you're made to believe that you are because of the push on, you have to assimilate, you have to do this, you have to do that. And it's like, you know, no, we do not. We can continue to bring our culture, to continue to celebrate. And traditionally, I feel like, you know, especially for the experience of the Latinx immigrant, you know, we have immigrants from all over the place, Canada, many countries in Africa, many places in Europe. But just specifically for Latinx, I feel like whenever I meet with someone, we have this, you know, really tight family ideology, right? Where we want to keep each other close. And then this country is trying to essentially pull that apart by making us believe that, you know, we have to do things differently. We can't bring that with us. And so first and foremost, I encourage many people to leverage that support system to definitely use that, but realize that we as individuals have a responsibility to not overburden that support system sometimes too, because they can't just drop everything whenever we need things. And so seeking out other services like mental health services in your areas, specifically for North Carolina, I've recently encountered this group called El Futuro, and they're doing specifically targeted mental health assistance for Latinx individuals in the state. And based on their name, they're trying to push the idea that in the future, this should be the norm. So that's one of the biggest mental health resources that I found. There's another one in the Greensboro area that's called Sunrise Amanecer. That's also trying to do specifically targeted help with mental health resources. But beyond that, you know, I benefited from a scholarship program called Condor Scholars, which was a program started in 2012 to help undocumented individuals get the funding needed, since we can't benefit from federal aid. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to have any private scholarships that are open for us to apply to. So finding resources like that, I know the West Coast tends to have a lot of community colleges that have a Dream Center, which is also like a center on campus for individuals to go seek some help. On the East Coast is not as common, unfortunately, but there are locations specifically to North Carolina, just because that's where I know a lot of resources right now. El Centro Hispano in the Triangle area. And there's a lot going out to the west side of North Carolina called ALAS, which is also another scholarship. But I think I've realized that there's a lot of leadership in schools now that are prioritizing this, which is good to give us hope. But there's a lot of work to be done. Outside of those, I do have a page where I've named the blog posting Leaving the Woodpile Higher Than You Found It, which is a mantra that I found in my first job and as a first gen corporate individual. Mm-hmm. Where they believed in essentially kind of saying, you know, you don't just show up, you have to show up and leave the resources higher than you found them, or, you know, improving the company as you go. And I love that because I see that in our community. Mm-hmm. I see that in the way that it takes a village, and our village visually to me represents that we need to leave resources available for others to pick up, but to build on those. We can't just drain them.
That is so, so important. Yeah, we need to add on that, because if not, we're kind of like staying on this loop, right? And it's already not enough. And I'm actually happy to hear you mention those resources, because I think that's honestly one of the hardest things as an immigrant is like finding them and finding something that works for you, for your immigration status, for your language, for like, right? Like you're like looking and searching in internet, and we're talking about, you were saying like you know about Google search a lot and that's part of your work, but like as an immigrant with the language barrier, with so many things that are happening, with the mental health not maybe at your best, finding resources is so difficult. And sometimes your family doesn't know either because they're also navigating their own situations in the country or somewhere else if you're not with them. So I truly appreciate you talking about mental health, talking about resources, and talking about our responsibility to also contribute to the community. I think the message of we're not alone is so big, so important, and really meaningful.
Thank you. Yes, and I really realized that aspect of our community really needs that central like plaza. And you know, if you've seen Coco, if you've seen Encanto, that was the best visual for me because I haven't grown up in those countries where I've seen it. But just seeing, you know, like the Mariachi Plaza in Coco, like I wish we had a plaza like that, that not only served as like an entertainment center, but an information center where our communities could go and just get the info they need, get the resource connections that they need to their local community, which I'm a huge advocate for making sure that everyone that can vote engages in voting, even if you have felt that your voice hasn't been heard, because at the local level, so many things are impacted. I know that the big noise in the media is the federal level for the presidential elections, but our school boards do a lot, our county commissioners, our city mayors, you know, and getting positions for individuals that represent our people better into those positions of power are going to be detrimental to changing our narrative.
Oh, and it goes back to what you were just saying, which I identify with as a Latina, of like this not taking on space that sometimes we suffer from. It's like this, you know, I don't know if I'm from here, so I don't know if I have the right, so I don't know if. But what you're saying is so important that we tell to ourselves, you know, my vote matters, my rights matter, my requests, my needs matter, and to voice them. I feel like it's such an important reminder for all of us to have like constantly, you know, what I have to say matters because I'm here. And this is, you know, the place where I'm making, building my life too. So.
Yes. And I think I heard a very beautiful quote said by one of the panelists at the summit I went to, that you are worthy, regardless of anything else that you're doing, of just being in this space. And I was just like, you know, I kind of have thought about how to place it into people's minds to just live with that, to embody that. Because we, at the moment that we are born, you know, we are on this planet that is a planet that is given back to us, which, you know, ties into my passion and love for advocating for better climate justice as well, because our communities are going to be so much more detrimentally impacted earlier than people that are, you know, emitting much more carbon emissions than our communities are. But we're going to be the first ones impacted. And so just having that climate justice, the fact that the moment we're born, this planet is giving so much to us. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we must demand that people take care of this planet so that we can benefit from being on this planet and taking up space.
100%. Oscar, what is a good email or social media where people can connect with you and part of the blogs that you were mentioning as well?
Yeah, so my email is OscarMROM@gmail.com. And then if you also go to OscarRomeroJorge.com, which is my personal website, it has links to a lot of different projects that I've worked on. It has a link to the blog site that I mentioned and also has my contact info, as well as my resume for anyone that's curious or forming also their resume. You know, I think one of the biggest things that I noticed is being a professional with parents that, you know, grew up working blue collar jobs, odd jobs. They didn't ever have to prepare a resume. And I was like, you know, I don't know what to do there. And I got help from career centers at universities, from mentorship programs that I've been privileged to do. But this has been a matter of like even dropping little like crumbs of bread like that throughout the internet for others to pick up and find. I found invaluable in navigating or finding resources that speak to our people, that are relevant to our people.
100%. Thank you so much for working on that, for creating those spaces and that platform. I'm going to make sure I leave links down below the description of this episode. And I, again, thank you so much, Oscar, for sharing part of your story, part of your work. And it was really inspiring to listen to you.
Thank you. This was wonderful. You know, very, very humbled opportunity to have you have considered me to be on here. And I'm hopeful that more people recognize the power in just being themselves and growing into a space where we can celebrate our culture, others' culture, because also it's super important to celebrate just the different varieties of people that we have on this planet.
100%. Thank you so much one more time. And thank you, everybody, for listening to today's episode. See you next time.